Welcome to the Three Martini Lunch. Grab a stool next to Greg Corumbus of Radio America and Jim Garrity of National Review. Three Martini's coming up.
Hey, really glad you're with us for the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. We've got good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And Jim, let's start with the good. And, you know, sometimes you have to wait for good news, but when it actually comes, it's very gratifying. You wish it came a lot sooner, but it's coming. We got to finally take out Ayman al-Zawahiri earlier this year. Wish we could have done it, well before 2001, along with bin Laden, of course. But even before 9/11, even before the East Africa embassy bombings, there was terror in the air, including the bombing of Pan Am Flight 103 over Lockerbie, Scotland, almost exactly 34 years ago today. It was December of 1988, 270 people aboard, 190 of them Americans, all of them killed. There have been some arrests in the past. You might remember the bizarre saga of El Megrahi, who the Scottish had in custody and then let go because he was supposedly on death's door, and then he lasted another several years after being returned to Libya. Well, now the U.S. has somebody in custody who is believed to be the bomb maker for this particular terrorist attack, Abu Aguila Mohammed Massoud. And here's Catherine Herridge of CBS News telling us a little bit more about this situation.
4 days before Christmas in 1988, the shattered nose and cockpit bearing the name Clipper Mate of the Seas symbolized American lives lost to international terrorism. A bomb ripped through the luggage hold an hour into the flight from London to New York's JFK. 259 lives cut short on the flight, 11 more killed by falling debris in Lockerbie, Scotland. 2 years ago, the Justice Department announced charges against Abu Aguila Mohammed Massoud, the alleged bomb maker. Massoud is the third Libyan charged in connection with the terrorist attack, but he would be the first to stand trial in an American court.
So, Jim, we don't know exactly when the charges are going to be coming. We don't know how strong the case is exactly. But I love the fact that we have not given up on this case. I love the fact that it looks like there will be some accountability and some justice here, assuming that prosecutors have their ducks in a row. And it's great to know that when you kill Americans, that you will be hunted down until you're found or you're dead.
I was going to say, Greg, it's as much as it is frustrating that it has taken so long for the long arm of American justice and counterterrorism and military, et cetera, to catch up with this guy. Events like this, I love the signal it sends. Like, you can live to be 100. We will never stop hunting you until you're dead, right? You can either die or you can live in fear that the U.S. is going to keep hunting you and someday is going to find you and is going to bring you to justice. And in this case, Greg, you hear this news, you're like, man, Lockerbie, that was like a generation ago. It was so long. And you feel really good that this guy, this little punk, this little twerp is going to feel the full force of American justice right up until the moment the Biden administration trades him away for somebody else. I exaggerate slightly. I don't think that will come to pass. Clearly, the Libyan government, or one of the Libyan governments, was cooperative in this effort to bring this terrorist to justice. I do think there was an interesting contrast with the Victor Boot experience, that Victor Boot was one of the most wanted guys in the world. I've seen some not so sharp knives in the drawer contend that, well, he didn't kill Americans. He only sold the weapons that killed Americans, as if that really makes that much of a moral distinction. You know, Boot still had 7 more years left on his sentence. And there's kind of this, obviously, good number of people in law enforcement who understand there was a great need to get Brittany Griner out. But, you know, watching this guy go free is utterly infuriating, enraging even. And so, you know, you put so much effort into getting these guys. Hopefully, I assume there'll be no effort to get this guy released. But it's kind of this interesting contrast. Here you have two figures who've killed Americans, two figures who have helped the cause of terrorism and the slaying of innocent lives around the world. One of them is finally facing justice. The other one is a free man, or, you know, effectively free man in Russia right now. I'll take the good news, Greg, but it kind of puts the news of last week into perspective.
Yeah, it's also chilling to see Victor Boot already on Russian television talking about how the only thing wrong with Putin's invasion of Ukraine was that it should have happened sooner. Well done, everybody.
Well, it's good for business, Greg.
Sure, he won't be back in the game anytime soon. Just a note to Merrick Garland or anybody else who's directly involved in this case. If the Scots want custody of this guy at any point, the answer is no. If he tells you that he's got days or weeks to live, assuming we convict the guy, the answer is no on compassionate release. You will rot. If we don't execute you, you will rot until your last breath.
I think good memory. Because wasn't there some guy who was like, we let him out because he was supposed to die in 6 months, and then he kept living and kept living?
Yes. Not good. The Scots got swindled on that one. Apparently, a lot of people in the West getting swindled by bad deals when it comes to horrible people they have in custody. When you have horrible people in custody, keep them in custody. Good grief. That's a bizarre end to a good martini, but if you need a good taste in your mouth after that, no better place to do it. Omaha Steaks. I absolutely love Omaha Steaks. I get so excited every time Mrs. Carubas tells me we're going to have Omaha Steaks or the burgers or the chicken or anything else that you custom order in your package. And right now, 50% off site-wide, plus an additional $40 off when you use our code MARTINI at checkout.
Omaha Steaks are naturally aged for the ultimate in tenderness, juiciness, and flavor. And you can send an assortment of mouth-watering favorites that are guaranteed to impress, like the legendary Butcher's Cut Filet Mignon, the air-chilled boneless chicken, the ultra-juicy burgers, and all kinds of easy-to-prepare comfort meals that can be ready in a flash. Today is December 12th. Christmas is coming, folks. So better shop early and beat that shipping rush.
Omaha Steaks, a gift from the heart, a gift that will be remembered with every unforgettable bite. Order with complete confidence, I can assure you, today, knowing you're ordering the very best. Visit omahasteaks.com to save 50% off site-wide, and then use our promo code MARTINI at checkout to get that extra $40 off your order. It's a huge savings. Minimum order may be required. omahasteaks.com, promo code MARTINI at checkout. omahasteaks.com, promo code MARTINI. All right, Jim, to our bad martini now, and certainly a twinge of crazy here as we look at some double standards going on. But you might remember that there was some, let's say, some upheaval in the Trump cabinet, well, really over 4 years, but especially in those first couple of years. There's a lot of shuffling going on, and one of them was Tom Price, former congressman from Georgia, became HHS secretary. One of his jobs was to get a repeal of Obamacare done, and so that did not go so well. But the main reason he was forced to resign less than a year into his term as HHS secretary was because he took 26 flights on private jets that year, costing taxpayers about $1.2 million. There was just a massive outcry from the media about how this was wasteful taxpayer dollars, elitism from the Trump administration, and it was just absolutely unethical, and he had to go. And so he did go. Now it's happening again, but apparently the only thing that's loud is the yawning coming from the media here. Fox News with the exclusive. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg, an advocate of increased government action to curb carbon emissions, has taken at least 18 flights using taxpayer-funded private jets since taking office. This was uncovered by the watchdog group Americans for Public Trust. They point out that Elaine Chao was also chided for using private jets on 7 occasions. Jim, I'm not sure exactly what the total of Pete Buttigieg's flights are to the American taxpayer, but if it's horrifically, shockingly, unacceptably wrong for Tom Price to do this 5 years ago, why does nobody care when Pete Buttigieg does it? Could it be a double standard?
Greg, there are three questions that I would like to have answered. The first is real clarity on what the law says about cabinet secretaries using private jets to get from one place to another. You can imagine circumstances in which a cabinet secretary absolutely needs to get someplace. You tend to think that might be more the Secretary of Defense, Secretary of State, maybe Health and Human Services, if there's some disease outbreak. You know, there can be some circumstances you can imagine a cabinet secretary really needs to get someplace really fast and just can't fly commercial. It's a little bit harder to think of the circumstances that a secretary of transportation would absolutely positively have to be someplace really fast. But OK, fine. Well, you know, let's imagine that that scenario occurs. Second, I'd like to know what the ethics are. And I'd like to have one consistent standard applied across both parties. If it was that wrong for Tom Price to do it, I don't understand why it's, you know, no big deal for Pete Buttigieg to use private jets so much. Third, I'd really love to see the incoming House majority of Republicans to ask Buttigieg these questions, because I imagine his answer would be something like, well, you don't expect me to fly commercial, do you? If you look at the airports, they're a mess. They're terrible. All the flights are delayed. Man, air travel's going down the tubes in this country. Somebody should do something about that. course, this is the transportation secretary I'm imagining speaking. Oh, by the way, I'd also love to see him justify the carbon emissions on that one. Since, you know, you want everybody else in the world to use electric cars, but him using a private jet, hey, no big deal. Yeah, it's, you know, we're used to this kind of double standards and hypocrisy, but just it would be refreshing to see Buttigieg called out on it and watching him sweat under the hot lights.
I want to see him in coach. Remember how John Kerry would arrogantly say, well, I have to travel by private jet because my work is so important into saving our climate. And then eventually, lately, I think he took at least one commercial flight, but I don't want to just see him on a commercial flight. I want to see him in coach. Can't you just picture John Kerry tucked in that middle seat, handing people their Coke and their pretzels as the refreshment cart goes along? Oh yeah, all of the gin and tonic or something, whatever it is.
Greg, I have long legs. That's really just not acceptable. You know what I'm going to say? The late Strom Thurmond, the senator from South Carolina, flew in coach. I was flying one year from D.C. to somewhere in Hilton Head, but I think the connecting flight was somewhere in Columbia or something like that. And he was flying back, you know, introduced myself, shook his hand, and then he went back into coach section. I was very impressed. So at least there are some lawmakers who fly coach, and I think he had an aisle seat. So maybe he just liked looking out the window.
It's nice to meet you, Mr. Getty. I hope you have a good time.
I think he used my business card to pick his teeth. I'm not sure. He was not overwhelmed with the honor of meeting me. But he was polite.
It's been a while.
God bless him.
I don't know how good my Strom Thurmond impression is anymore. But that's as close as it goes. Well, let's move on to our second great sponsor of the day, and that is Quip electric toothbrushes. Look, good health starts with good habits, and Quip makes it easy when it comes to brushing your teeth by delivering all the oral care essentials you need to take care of your mouth.
The Quip electric toothbrush is loved by more than 7 million mouths. And it's got timed sonic vibrations with 30-second pulses to guide you to a dentist-recommended 2-minute clean. It's got a lightweight and sleek design for both adults and kids with no wires or bulky chargers that are going to weigh you down. They have a multi-use travel cover that doubles as a mirror mount so there's less clutter around your sink. And it's got reusable handles in a range of sleek metal hues, including the best-selling all black and all pink, as well as bright plastic colors that are sure to put a little pop in your bathroom counter.
They also have the toothpaste, the refillable floss, the refillable sugar-free gum that helps to keep your oral health strong as well, refillable mouthwash, and they've got it all. So if you go to getquip.com/martini right now, you'll get your first refill of brushes free. That's your first refill free at getquip.com/martini. Spelled getquip.com/martini. Quip, the good habits company. All right, on to our final martini now, our crazy martini. And Jim, the media love Democrats. That's not news. That's not breaking news. It's crazy, you know, that they're that partisan, but that's not the issue. The depressing part is the lengths to which they will humiliate themselves to grovel at the feet of Democrats. If you are going to write a article or put together a story in some ways that is glowing about John Fetterman, I don't know where you'd go with it. From a lefty perspective, I guess there are certain policy positions that they love. We don't like them. But the last place you would probably talk about the greatness of John Fetterman, if there was any, is his fashion. Nonetheless, that's exactly where he lands now, according to The Hill. Senator-elect John Fetterman of Pennsylvania, included in the New York Times list of the 93 most stylish people of the year. The diverse list for 2022's most fashionable includes a typical host of celebrities from Kim Kardashian to Beyonce and Harry Styles, but also some less likely candidates. Fetterman was featured on the list next to a photo of him wearing his traditional uniform, a hooded sweatshirt, shorts, and a pair of sneakers. The Times commented that Fetterman would bring the workwear clothing brand Carhartt to Capitol Hill. So, Jim, I have nothing against hoodies. In fact, I'm wearing one right now. Nonetheless, I do not consider myself a fashion plate for doing so. It is great casual wear. I don't understand this incessant demand to just drool over everybody, even for reasons on the left that are completely unreasonable. You know, and then you go back to whatever you thought of the Trumps. The immediate reaction is Melania Trump, high fashion model, beautiful woman, wore very stylish clothes for 4 years. But because she was married to Trump, nary a magazine cover or any profile about her fashion and anything like that. But John Fetterman, wears a black hoodie and cargo shorts, and the New York Times is sitting there with, you know, their fists in their cheeks going, amazing.
I do like that visual image of them just kind of gazing up at him. So there was something kind of fascinating when I started doing my digging into John Fetterman's career, particularly as mayor of Braddock. Now, Braddock was this, you know, really hard hit blue collar town. Almost all the industry had left, poverty, just every conceivable problem. And you could write a very nice story about John Fetterman being this guy who grew up middle class, upper middle class, went to good schools, was working for, I believe, Chubb Insurance. And he has this experience where his high school friend, you know, dies in a car accident. He wonders what he wants to get out of life, joins the Big Brothers program. And more, you know, just he gets sent to Braddock, Pennsylvania, and kind of falls in love with the place, even though with all of its problems, he's like, I can turn this place around. Now, if you remember our coverage of that Pennsylvania Senate race, it's tough to argue that Braddock really experienced this, you know, genuine renaissance. I think he tried hard. I think he made the differences where he did. He did not get along with the city council. Some of that may well be the city council's fault. Some of that may be his fault. He was spending a good portion of his parents' money to fix up projects and properties and stuff like that. You can write a nice story about that. I don't know if it necessarily says, let's make that guy the next senator. But the interesting thing is when you look at all of those stories that were written about John Fetterman, and it seemed like one led to another. He appeared on Colbert, and then the Rolling Stone wrote about him, and then the Atlantic magazine wrote about him, and it all kind of like, you know, it was like dominoes, one after another. They all talked about his appearance, and they all had this, like, you could almost hear the pitch in the editorial meeting. This guy looks like he belongs in a biker gang, but really, he's a small town mayor, and he's got a degree from Harvard, you know. Journalists love this. Hey, this looks like X, but really it's Y. I don't know if it goes back to, you know, Highlights magazine and loving optical illusions or something like that, but it was kind of this very surface level, orient, like the most important part of the profile was the photo shoot of John Fetterman in front of some, you know, rusting industrial equipment, arms folded, looking huge and showing off his tattoos. And it was just this, like, it was so, his appearance sold the interest in him so much, because his record as a small town mayor was not all that impressive. Like I said, you can write a nice story about he wanted to fix up the place, really didn't do that much, but he tried hard. Good for him. But there was just kind of this idea of, like, get a load of this guy. And I went through it, all the different descriptions of, you know, he looks like a professional wrestler. Oh, my God. He looks like a Bond henchman, you know, and just going on and on. And so once again, he's now in the Senate. And I noticed the New York Times isn't as interested as what kind of legislation does he want to introduce? What committees does he want to be on? No, look, what is he going to wear to the Senate? You know, if you feel like an unhealthy portion of political journalism is simply like movie reviews, it's like theater critic. It's like, what does it look like? How does it make me feel? As opposed to, what is this person actually going to do? Your suspicions are well-founded.
Yeah, it's incredible. I think there was one time where, wasn't it Melania wore white, and then the Washington Post fashion columnist hated it, and then Hillary wore white for a convention speech, and that was the greatest thing that's ever happened in fashion. And so it's just wild. I'm a big fan of Carhartt. It's hard to go anywhere in the UP and not see a lot of people wearing Carhartt, especially this time of year. So I'm a big fan of it. Not sure the Senate floor is where you want to do it, but after Kyrsten Sinema started wearing jean jackets there, who knows, Jim? Who knows what we're going to see in terms of what people are wearing on the Senate floor. But again, not my biggest concern. It's the horrible legislation Chuck Schumer is going to still be able to push forward, because we couldn't knock him out as a majority leader. But nonetheless, the New York Times finding yet another absurd way to drool all over their favorite libs. Anyway, happy Monday.
I was going to say, some days you can just tell it's Monday, can't you, Greg?
Exactly. Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks so much for being with us today. Do subscribe to the podcast if you don't already. Tell a friend about us as well. Thanks very much for your 5-star ratings and your kind reviews. Please keep those coming. Also, get us on your home devices. All you have to say is play 3 Martini Lunch podcast. Follow us on Twitter. He's at Jim Garrity. I'm at Dateline_DC. Don't forget about Jim's brand new book, Gathering 5 Storms, and the accompanying short story, Saving the Devil. Have a terrific Monday, and join us again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.